But it's time once again for It Says in the Papers with Caroline Murphy.
It's another wet morning with Irish Water getting a fair bit of attention. It makes the lead in the Irish Independent, Irish Examiner, the Irish Daily Mail and the Irish Sun. The Examiner leads with a job which it says is still to be filled there. Irish Water has finally started a hunt for a data protection manager, we're told, months after it started the process of demanding and recording customers' PPS numbers. The Independent, meanwhile, leads on those who are already working there and on their bonus structure. Irish Water has agreed to cut controversial bonus payments, says the piece, but only by 4%. We're told that while workers there are in line to receive a maximum of up to 15% of salary, a further 4% payment, which applied to those who far exceeded expectations, has been axed. The story says the move comes amid continued public opposition to charges and with weekend marches planned across the country. And this is the aspect picked up on by The Sun. The headline there is Boiling Point, with the subheadlines Mass Protests to Rock Government, Ministers, We Made Mess. In the story, Declan de Breydoun says the government has conceded it might have to row back on planned water charges, and he quotes Minister Alex White, "We've learned lessons. I don't think this project is ready." It's almost ready for its board to be merged with that of Arvia, however, and what will happen to directorships then makes the front of the Irish Times. Irish Water and Arvia directors to reapply for jobs when boards merge is the headline on a piece there. The Irish Daily Mail, meanwhile, leads with what it says Minister believes we will and indeed do have the right to know about those directors. Leo Varadkar says the public has a right to know how qualified and suitable directors of Irish Water are for their positions, says the story there. For its lead story, though, the Times goes with some good news for those who were subject to public service pay cuts. Howlin' to begin unwinding legislation on pay cuts is the headline. Stephen Collins says that the minister yesterday secured the agreement of his cabinet colleagues to delete a key section of the emergency legislation that underpinned them. The section being abolished, says Collins, gave the government as an employer the right to cut core pay and adjust working hours in order to secure savings in the overall pay bill. The size of the overall pay bill in the social justice sector must be shrinking, however, as sources of funding are drying up and numbers working in it fall. That's according to a piece on the front of the Examiner. Social justice sector will have lost 31% of workforce by end of 2015 is the headline. The story is about a report compiled by researcher Brian Harvey. We're told that making the point that community development has been historically the front line of state outreach to disadvantaged communities, he found that job losses were most keenly felt in the community sector, where there's been a 45% fall in employment levels since before the recession. Also this morning, there's more on the Maria Cahill case. The headline on a front page piece in the Times is Kenny willing to meet IRA investigators. We're told that Taoiseach has written to Gerry Adams saying he is willing to meet the four people named in the Spotlight programme about Ms. Cahill's ordeal, and not anybody else. In The Independent, meanwhile, Ivan Yates considers the Cahill case in the context of the Des O'Malley memoir published this week. Under the headline, Mary Lou should read O'Malley's book to learn that serving Ireland isn't just about following the leader, he says of O'Malley, he exemplified integrity. If you're a CJ high loyalist, you'll find this book tough going, says Yates. And he adds, Mary Lou and other Sinn Féin TDs face the same dilemma as Des O'Malley did in Fianna Fáil. Otherwise, this morning, there's plenty about the farmers. Farmers claim gains in bitter beef price row is the headline on the piece off the front of The Independent. And on the front of The Examiner, there's a piece about Google developing a pill which, when we swallow it, will be able to go through our bloodstreams searching for signs of cancer. But finally this morning, why cancer occurs in the first place is one of those things scientists would dearly love to know. According to a feature on the science page in the Times, it's one of the 10 mysteries that refuse to yield their secrets. And among the others, the origins of life, whether the supernatural is for real, and why we fall in love.
All right, Caroline, thank you for that. Good morning. It's just gone 8 o'clock on Thursday, October 30th. This is Morning Ireland on RTÉ Radio 1 with Audrey Carvel and Fran McNulty.
Good morning. The headlines. Stormont ministers will try to strike a deal on a budget today ahead of a deadline tomorrow. Israel has faced strong criticism at the UN Security Council over plans to build homes in occupied East Jerusalem. And commuters are being told of major disruption to train services in and out of Houston Station in Dublin this morning. The news in full is read now by Clodagh Walsh.
Ministers of the power-sharing executive of Northern Ireland will try to reach agreement on a budget during talks at Stormont later today. A £100 million loan on offer from the British Chancellor George Osborne is contingent on the executive concluding a deal on their expenditure plans by the end of this week. Our Northern editor Tommy Gorman.
For months, the power-sharing administration at Stormont has struggled. The five-party coalition couldn't agree on how to carve up the reduced block grant from Westminster. And the DUP has prevaricated about getting down to discussions about problem areas of the peace process. But the climate may be changing. A meeting of the ministers and the executive has been called for this afternoon. There could well be a deal on the budget, including agreement on where expenditure cutbacks will be made. Also, for the first time, the DUP is expected to have a meeting with the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Charlie Flanagan, as part of the wider talks process. For the past 2 weeks, the DUP message has been that Dublin must realise it has no role in the internal affairs of Northern Ireland. It's a fair assumption that the arrival of US envoy, the retired Senator Gary Hart, has concentrated minds and put all the parties in best behaviour mode. Several weeks of difficult negotiations on deep-rooted problems lie ahead. But today may be an occasion when the capacity to successfully compromise makes a cameo appearance.
A report by Northern Ireland's Police Ombudsman has found that RUC Special Branch officers withheld information from RUC detectives investigating the Omagh bombing in County Tyrone in 1998. The Ombudsman, Dr. Michael Maguire, said the failure to pass on details of telephone numbers used by the Real IRA gang hampered the initial investigation but could not have prevented the attack. The United Nations and the United States have strongly criticised Israel over its plans to build homes on the occupied territory of East Jerusalem. The UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, Jeffrey Feltman, warned that the construction could ignite more violence. He urged Israel to rescind its plan to build 1,000 new homes, which he said was in violation of international law and contrary to the two-state solution.
Continued settlement activity in occupied Palestinian territory is doing significant damage to any possibility of a lasting peace between the two sides and is moving the situation ever closer to a one-state reality. Further delay in the pursuit of peace will only exacerbate the conflict further and deepen divisions.
The United States said it was deeply concerned at what it called provocative actions by Israel. A nurse in the United States has given the authorities in her home state of Maine an ultimatum. Lift her Ebola quarantine today or she will disregard the restrictions and go to court. Casey Hickox, who's 33, tested negative for the virus on returning to the US from treating patients in Sierra Leone, but was confined to her home against her will. Her lawyer says she poses no medical risk and her enforced quarantine is unconstitutional. Speaking at the White House last night, President Obama said he believed that, in time, the spread of the virus could be halted.
It's critical that we remain focused on the facts and on the science. Keep in mind that of the 7 Americans treated for Ebola so far, most of them while serving in West Africa, all 7 have survived. But we know how to treat this disease. And now that the West African nations of Senegal and Nigeria have been declared Ebola-free, we know that this disease can be contained and defeated if we stay vigilant and committed, and America continues to lead the fight.
A US medical devices company has announced that it is to generate 100 jobs at its plant in Athlone in County Westmeath. Teleflex Incorporated said it will recruit the extra staff over the next 3 years as it expands its existing operation. Teleflex provides medical devices for critical care and surgery. The technology company OpenNet has announced the provision of 30 jobs at its global headquarters in Dublin. The company makes software that enables its global mobile phone and cable customers improve profitability. Irish Rail has said there will be considerable disruption to train services in and out of Houston Station in Dublin this morning. A section of the line between Sallins and Newbridge is closed at the request of the Gardaí, who are investigating a fatality. Sinead Morris reports.
Commuter services will operate between Sallins and Houston only. There will be no commuter services between Port Laois and Sallins this morning. Intercity services from Cork, Kerry, Limerick, Galway and Westport will terminate at Kildare, with road transfers to and from Houston. All other Waterford services will terminate at Athy, with a bus transfer to and from Houston. The line is not expected to reopen until after the morning peak travel time.
Mill Street Garda station in Galway City was evacuated of personnel following flooding yesterday evening. The station remains unoccupied and it's understood that repair work may need to be carried out. A group from Edinburgh has won the Mercury Prize, which is awarded to the best album released in Britain and Ireland over the past 12 months. Young Fathers, a hip-hop band, won the prize for their album Dead. And now the time is 7 minutes past eight.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant Engineering. Keeping Irish families warm for 35 years. Think heating, think boilers, think Grant. GrantEngineering.ie.
It'll be mild today with patches of rain and drizzle. There'll also be hill and coastal fog. Highest temperatures will range from 14 to 17 degrees.
You're welcome back to the programme. It's a quarter past eight. Cabinet meets this morning. Water charges sure to dominate discussions. Also today, the Environment Minister, Alan Kelly, and the Energy Minister, Alex White, will join the other four members of the Economic Management Council to discuss how the government will respond to the deep public anger over water charges. Ahead of a series of protests on the issue around the country over the weekend, Cian McCormack has been on the road assessing people's mood on water, or more to the point, Irish water. Cian started his trip in Tipperary.
This journey starts on a cold, crisp morning in Ross Grey. Pulling up outside the Abbey Hall, a woman's waiting for the 20 to 9 bus to Limerick.
My name is Catherine and we're here in Ross Grey. Catherine Lorigan.
Water charges, what's your opinion?
I would always have agreed with water charges. And I've no objection to paying water charges.
Catherine is a retired school teacher, and what she says echoes what others will say later on this journey.
It's Irish Water that I have the objection to at the moment, the way it's organised, the way it's going about its business.
An hour later, just metres away at Castle Street, there's a queue outside the post office.
Water's free, should be free. So, I mean, next year we're going to have to pay for the year, have we?
The view here is different to Catherine's.
It's a total disgrace, that's what it is. To people that are on social welfare and people that can't afford it or anything like that.
Michael McCarthy stops on his way out of the post office. He wasn't at the protest against water charges in Ross Grey earlier this month, but it's likely he'll be at the next one.
Well, hopefully I will, and I'm going to make it my business to go to it. And I think everyone in Ireland and in every small town and village should get up and go to it, so they should. Let people know, let the government know that they are standing against these water charges.
Back near the bus stop, 10 o'clock mass has finished at St Cronin's Church.
He's down from RT, he's talking about the water.
After just about 30 seconds.
About the water, he's down from RT.
Catherine White from Duncairn stops her car when she sees the green RTE microphone. She has two passengers, Angela Fitzpatrick and Mick McLaughlin.
Well, I have my form filled up, but I don't want any hassle in here. And wherever comes, comes. That's my opinion, anyway.
That's your opinion. What's your opinion?
I think it's hard enough. Like, we'll have to pay it. I think there should have been did a lot before the meters went in and talked more about this. I don't know, is it too late now the meters are going in? I think people are going to have to pay it anyway.
But I think it's a scandal that they give all the bonuses and charging the people for the money, for water that should be the God-given right.
Have you signed up your forms?
We have, unfortunately, but we didn't give the PPSI number.
Skipping along the M7, the next stop is Port Laois. It's very busy by midday, parking is at a premium, and opinions are mixed.
My position is that it's scandalous, and I think it's very unfair that we have to give our PRSI number.
I feel when they get a service, you're entitled to pay for it.
I think we need to pay for water. You know, then it should be properly treated and whatever when there's money going into it. But I think it should be run by the state rather than a private company.
Like any tax, I don't like the fact that there's another one coming in. I suppose we have to pay for it, but I don't like the way they're going about doing it.
I can't afford it. The fact that we're one of the wettest countries in the world and we have to pay for water. I mean, we're paying for bins, everything. We're just not getting a good package. There should be, like what they do in England, you get your bin collection, your water rates, your everything, all in one package. But they're slapping us with different things all the time.
Almost 2 hours later, after delays at Newlands Cross, Dublin's Grafton Street is buzzing with activity. There's an interesting insight from County Clare man Seamus Fitzgerald. He protested at the Clare Says No to Water Charges rally in Ennis earlier this month, but his protest wasn't against paying for water.
So yeah, I've no problem paying for it, but I don't like paying for incompetence and I don't like paying for bonuses that people don't deserve or earn. I don't see why they should be getting bonuses. Yeah, I think they've gone about it all wrong. I think their PR campaign from the start has been all wrong.
€5 for €2.
Across the Liffey on Henry Street, there's a different view. As far as mother and daughter Moira Ryan and Deirdre McGrain are concerned, water charges are bad.
Halloween's bad news, €1.
Oh, well, I don't agree with them and I won't be paying them, to be honest with you, because we're already being hit with property tax and, I mean, people are struggling enough as it is.
There's a protest on at the weekend.
Yeah,
will you go to it?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Were you at the last one?
Yep.
What is the big message coming from this?
The message is that the people aren't going to stand for any more of these charges.
You can't afford any more. You can't take what people haven't got. You know, I mean, I'm a pensioner. They can't take any more off me.
Do you think they'll listen?
I think they'll have to, yeah. If the protests weren't as big, if the protest wasn't as big as it was last week, they would have fogged it off. Now they know they can't.
Moira Ryan and Deirdre McGrain ending that report from Tipperary and Portlaoise by Cian McCormack. We can talk to our political correspondent David Davenpower now. David, just how worried is the government about these protests coming up over the weekend?
I think ministers are worried about the issue in general. I think they accept that it's very little that can be done in order to defuse the public anger that you heard there in advance of the weekend. But I think ministers are very, very seized of the extent to which this issue has grabbed the public imagination. I mean, virtually everybody in that report there had a misgiving about the way this had been handled. Some people saying they'd pay it, but they didn't want to pay it. Others saying that they were unhappy, to put it mildly, about the way Irish Water had carried out their business. But the Economic Management Council will be looking at this today. That's the powerful inner cabinet of Michael Noonan, Brendan Howland, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach. They'll be joined by Alan Kelly and by Alex White, whose department will have overall control of the parent company of Irish Water. But it's being stressed that they're not going to have any conclusions in short order, and in fact it will be a couple of weeks before there is any clarity about which way the government intends to move on this, because I think there's an expectation that there will be some further easement for people following the changes in the budget. And talking to people around Leinster House, the preoccupation among government TDs seems to be easing the plight for people who have adult children living at home, who of course could face quite a substantial water bill for those children who are 18. And moreover, many of those are likely to be in the urban areas, particularly Dublin, which is politically very important, obviously, for the survival of the coalition, because given the cost of rents and so on in Dublin, any adult children are more likely to stay at home now than to be looking around for expensive accommodation. So that's a cohort of people that the ministers will be looking at. But there is an overall fundamental requirement that more than 50% of all the revenue from Irish Water comes from its customers. So there's a limit to which there can be any kind of relief for people who are feeling the burden of this.
And in relation to the families with grown-up children, David, are they possibly considering a cap on charges?
Well, that's one possibility, or maybe increasing the allowance. But all of that is subject to the proviso that it can't impact too much on that fundamental requirement that 51% of the revenue for Irish Water comes from its customers. Otherwise, it will find its way onto the national balance sheet. And the very reason that Irish Water has been set up in the way it is to keep it off the balance sheet in such a way that the utility can ultimately raise money on the open market itself. So there is limited room for manoeuvre here, but whatever they do, I think the ministers will be focusing on that cohort of people that have adult children living at home and who could face substantial bills. There's no two ways about it, even with the relief that's been provided in the budget and elsewhere. The bills could be substantial there.
David, I want to move on and talk to you about this letter that Enda Kenny has sent to the Sinn Féin leader and TD for Louth, Gerry Adams. What's in it?
Well, it's a very brief letter, really. It merely notes that Mr. Adams has asked Enda Kenny to meet with the four people involved in the IRA investigation into the allegations made by Maria Cahill. And it says, while I have not named any individuals, says Mr. Kenny in the letter, I have willing to meet them as you requested, as they indicated in the Doyle. In order to arrange the meeting, I would be grateful, he says to Gerry Adams, if you could provide me with the contact details of the individuals concerned. Now, government sources are adamant that these are the four individuals that are named in the BBC Spotlight programme as having been involved in the investigation. And they suggest that Mr. Adams has been trying to muddy the waters in recent weeks in recent days in terms of who he understands Mr. Kenny wants to meet. And this arose briefly from an exchange in the Doyle last week when Mr. Adams said to Enda Kenny, these people, you've met Maria Cahill, will you meet the people she's accusing? And Mr. Kenny said, of course I will. Now, the politics of this, I suppose, is that Enda Kenny is quite happy to prolong this controversy, damaging as it is for Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin, on the other hand, countered that not only did Mr. Adams ask for the meeting, but there has been correspondence subsequently in which Mr. Adams has followed that up. But there is a suggestion around Leinster House that there's an element of Gerry Adams' bluff being called, even though he has, as I say, been following up on these meetings. They could be obviously politically problematical, and there could be a legal hazard for those involved, because remember, the people involved in the alleged investigation were prosecuted in Northern Ireland, even though that prosecution ultimately failed.
David, thank you very much indeed. Our political correspondent, David Davenport.
And to Waterford now, where up to 60 people turned out at an anti-racism rally in the city yesterday evening. Organisers said the demonstration was in reaction to two protests against a number of Roma families in the city last weekend. Yesterday, the Minister of State, Éan O'Riordan, hosted a discussion at the University of Limerick on legislating to deal with hate crime. We'll be speaking to the Minister presently. But first, let's hear from some of the people who turned out yesterday.
We've organised this protest in reaction to the racist attacks that were carried out Saturday and Sunday night on Roma families in the town, just to give people of Waterford a chance to stand up and say this is not what Waterford is about, and it's minority of people.
I'm just here because myself and the family were very upset to think that people would, I suppose, take the law into their own hands in any way, would behave in an aggressive or a violent way. I understand that people have concerns about certain behaviours, but I suppose there's appropriate responses, and those would be within the legal system.
I'm not involved in any political party, but I did get involved in the Waterford Against Racism group back in June because I was so shocked by the number of racist pages, particularly towards the Roma community. You know, I just feel that the local people of Waterford have been manipulated into paying more and more attention towards the Roma community as opposed to tackling crime in Waterford as a whole. There's crime in every single sector of community. I mean, I worked with the traveller community for years, and again, you know, all the things that have been said about Romas were said about travellers.
Well, we're supporting it because essentially it's an anti-racist gathering. That's not to say that all the people that gathered over the weekend that all of those people are racist. A lot of people were motivated by the fact that a gang was wreaking havoc in terms of people being beaten up and that, and they wanted to put a stop to it. But behind all that, there's a core of people who have a different agenda altogether, and they have a racist agenda. And that's what we're worried about. Not so much the people. They shouldn't have done what they did on the weekend, but we're not saying that all those people are hardcore racists by any manner of means.
Some of those who turned out at the anti-racism rally in Waterford, speaking to RTE's Damien Tiernan last night. On the line now, Eoin O'Riordan, Minister of State for New Communities, Culture and Equality. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you think, Eoin O'Riordan, that there's a significant issue with racism in general in this country?
Well, I think the speakers that you just had there on your Vox Pop are more in line with the people of Waterford than I would know, but certainly issues that happened in Waterford there last week and other incidents around the country have led me to believe, and you know, groups such as the ICCL and the Hate and Hostility Group in Limerick, to believe that we need to have some focus on our hate crime legislation, or indeed our lack of hate crime legislation. I've been meeting a number of NGOs for the last number of years to discuss the Incitement to Hatred Act that we have, the failings of that act, and do we need to have more robust legislation in Ireland to deal with incidents of hate crime, and I've come to the conclusion that we do.
You said last night in Limerick you would be pretty terrified at the moment if you were a member of the Roma community. Is that an overreaction?
I don't think so, because I think if you were to observe what happened in Waterford, if you were to see what was written on the Facebook pages, if you were to see what actually occurred with what looked like a lynch mob outside a private residence chanting Roma, 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 out, 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 and then breaking windows and terrifying a family. If I was a member of the Roma community in that city at that time, I would be pretty terrified. But I think this goes deeper than just the Roma community. I think we have to have a situation in Ireland that we have legislation that underpins it. You know, our society that has a threshold of decency under which people cannot descend. I think that if people have an issue around criminality, then the Gardaí are well placed to deal with issues of criminality.
Just on that, Minister, one person arrested and released without charge after that incident in Waterford during the week. Does that surprise you?
Well, I have met the Garda superintendent in Waterford, and I know what he is trying to achieve. I know that groups in Waterford have tried to campaign to get Waterford the status of a city of sanctuary. I know Ciara Conway, the TD down there, has worked very hard to do that too, to have an image of Waterford which is a very welcoming one and which gives respect to all different nationalities, ethnic backgrounds and peoples from wherever they come from when they live in Waterford. So the way the Gardaí have dealt with that issue around the city of sanctuary, the way that they talk to me about the concerns they have around direct provision, the issues that they are dealing with day to day, they are best served to deal with, you know, issues.
Yeah, we all know that, but the point is that a lynch mob, as you described it yourself, appeared on a family, arrived at a family's home, yeah, and did exactly what you described, and one person was arrested.
Well, that's, you know, the Gardaí know how best to deal with these situations, and I'm quite happy that they dealt with that situation well, because there wasn't another protest that happened the next night.
How soon are we going to see this issue legislated for?
Well, this conversation we had yesterday in UL was with quite a number of NGOs who, you know, from disability groups, from traveller groups, from groups who deal with ethnic minorities, and they have been focusing on the area of hate crime for quite a while. What they are hoping to do, and what the Hate and Hostility Research Group in UL are hoping to do, is to come up with heads of a bill they might present to me in May, with all the NGOs on board as to what we want to achieve with this hate legislation. Effectively, what we have at the moment is that, if you take Waterford for an example, there is legislation that people could possibly pursue in terms of the incitement to hatred, but as soon as a brick went through the window, that brick and that window would be treated under the law as any other brick going through any other window in any other circumstance, and we don't necessarily think that's the way we want our legislation to be. I mean, there's other examples in Canada and in England and Wales which have legal systems close to ours who deal with these situations in a different manner.
Yeah, how soon, Minister?
Yeah, well, in May, the hope is that with more research done, that the heads of a bill will be presented to me in May, and in May it will be my responsibility then to get governmental support to talk to the Attorney General about it and to progress it from there.
Okay, just briefly in conclusion on the issue of Irish Water, your colleague, Minister Alex White, is quoted in this morning's newspapers as saying about Irish Water he doesn't think the project is ready. Firstly, do you agree with him? And also on the issue of bonuses, reduced by 4% bonuses for people working in Irish Water, is that enough?
Well, I think that's a newspaper report. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but I do know Alan Kelly and Alex White are meeting with the Economic Management Council today, and out of that I'm quite sure that there'll be decisions made that we'll be discussing at the Labour Parliamentary Party next week. Do I think the Irish Water has been handled well? I don't, but I think in terms of the public perception of this issue, I think many people are reasonably comfortable with the idea of paying for water, but very uncomfortable with the manner in which
Are you happy for it to proceed as planned?
I think we have more conversations to have about this. I think I would agree with Alex White. I think Alex White and Alan Kelly, as I say, will be at the Economic Management Council today, and we'll see what comes out of that.
Sounds like a no to me.
In terms of?
Are you happy for it to proceed as planned?
As I said, I would agree with what Alex White has said, but this issue will be discussed today at the Economic Management Council. The Labour Parliamentary Party will discuss it again next week, and Alan Kelly has also said he wants a full review of the pay structure of Irish Water. So nobody's going to pretend that Irish Water has been handled well, correctly, and there's a massive communication problems. We want people to be on board with this, and we want people to be able to stand over a water system that works. We've had difficulties up until now, and I think possibly we've tried to do too much too soon. So, but we have to deal with that situation, and we're determined to do it.
And could slowing down the rollout help in that regard?
Again, I'm not so sure about that. But I mean, the ministers who are in charge of this area will have, definite decisions, I'd imagine, today, which we'll discuss with us as a parliamentary party, and Fine Gael will have their own conversation about it next week as well, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, Minister Éan O'Riordan, thanks for speaking to us this morning. Des is here now with sport.
Yeah, morning to you, Fran. Let's start with the live sport in golf. Graham McDowell has started really well in China this morning. The leader is Francis Alexander Levy, who's bidding for his third victory of the season. This is the BMW Masters in Shanghai, and Levy opened with a flawless 65, so he's 7 under par. Graham McDowell just 2 off the lead on 5 under. Shane Lowry and Michael Hoy have finished on 2 under, and Paul McGinley is 1 under after 17 holes. In soccer, the big news last night was that the holders, Manchester City, were surprisingly knocked out of the English League Cup when they lost at home to Newcastle. Newcastle's teenage forward Rolando Ahrens and Moussa Sissoko scored the Newcastle goals. They've reached the last 8 now. They'll go to Tottenham. It's been a tough season so far for Newcastle, but this win keeps their recent good run going and eases the pressure on manager Alan Pardew.
It was an outstanding display and great for our fans. You know, it's been difficult the first part of this season, but we've believed in ourselves and we've come through that spell. And now we have a great chance on Saturday to really give our home fans something to shout about.
In contrast, Manchester City fans have little to shout about, and City now face into their weekend clash with Manchester United, having shown poor form in their last 3 games, a real cause for concern for their manager Manuel Pellegrini.
Well, of course, it was not a good week. We draw first in Russia, and after that we have 2 defeats. We must continue trying to recover and repeat our style of play, to try to think about the future.
Elsewhere last night, Spurs were 2-0 winners over Brighton. Eric Lamella and Harry Kane scored their goals. Irish international Shane Long scored his first goal for Southampton. They won 3-2 at Stoke, and Southampton now travel to Sheffield United. In the 2 other quarter-finals, the league leaders Chelsea will go to Derby County and Liverpool travel to Bournemouth. In the Scottish League Cup, Celtic beat Partick Thistle 6-0. Aberdeen beat Hamilton 1-0. Adam Rooney, the Dubliner, scored the goal. And in the game of the night, Dundee United beat Hibs 7-6 in a penalty shootout after a 3-all draw. Speaking of Scotland, the FAI released a statement last night in the wake of fans' criticism about regular fans not being able to get a ticket for the big game against Scotland in Celtic Park next month. And the FAI said they regret that the SFA has not increased the allocation. They only received 5% allocation, that's 3,200 tickets. And the FAI said they're particularly disappointed that the Scottish FA is continuing to sell tickets on its website after they had told the FAI the match was sold out. And many of these tickets are now being taken up by Irish supporters out of desperation. And the FAI outlined where the tickets went to. But clearly the demand is far greater than the FAI can meet. Rio Ferdinand faces an extended spell on the sidelines after being hit with a 3-match ban by the English FA for using a crude insult on Twitter. He's going to also face a £25,000 fine plus a severe warning to toe the line and an order to attend an education programme was handed down by the FA. They're concerned obviously about the growing use of players responding. What happened was Ferdinand responded to a fellow who slagged him on Twitter.
Right.
And he insulted the fella's mother. So that was the background to it. But obviously players will have to be careful about that. In Gaelic games, the Donegal senior football final between Glenswilly and St Eunan's will go ahead as planned next Sunday. Niamh Connell had objected to a Glenswilly substitute being allowed to replace Kieran Bonner, who was dismissed on a black card in the semi-final. Bonner, though, had already picked up a yellow card earlier in the match, and so no substitution should have been allowed. The Donegal CCC met both clubs last night, and after much deliberation, they adopted the referee's report. They did note the objection but decided the result would stand. In baseball, the San Francisco Giants have won the World Series. They beat the Kansas City Royals 3-2 in Game 7 and win the series 4-3. Wild rioting in the streets in San Francisco.
Mayhem.
Well, celebration is the word, but it's effectively rioting. Two people have been shot, not killed. In racing, Magician, winner of last year's Breeders' Cup Turf, was withdrawn from Saturday's running of the race at Santa Anita because of lameness. Trainer Aidan O'Brien said the lameness was detected in Magician's right foreleg when he was taken out of a stall in the quarantine barn. And the action this afternoon is in Clonmel. First race is at 1:25.
Des, thank you very much. 14 minutes to 9. Significant military manoeuvres in European airspace. That's what NATO says Russia has been doing over the past 24 hours. The military alliance has said Russia's actions were possibly endangering civil air travel. Military analyst Declan Power is with us now. Declan, these manoeuvres have been over the Baltic Sea, the North Sea and the Atlantic Ocean. What do you make of it?
Yeah, well, it's longer than 24 hours because it's been going on some time over the Baltic area, and NATO had established a Baltic air patrol to try and contain this. What we're seeing now is diversification and indeed an element of escalation by the Russians and what they're doing. They have moved it beyond the Baltic. We've seen reports of Russian aircraft off the coast of Portugal and over the Nordic states, Norway, and indeed Finland and Sweden, which, though not NATO members, have been coordinating their activities with the NATO states in responding to this. What it is, it's a muscle-flexing exercise by Putin. I mean, militarily, this was typical activity during the Cold War where fighters would routinely buzz into areas. Now, what's interesting here is that MiG-31 fighters have been used, but also 7 aircraft left a Russian airbase at Kaliningrad during the weekend, the more recent incident you referred to as well. They were Tupolev bombers that were refueled in flight by Ilyushin tankers. Now, that was showing a degree of Russian prestige and force projection, and also showing their ability to project force well outside their base. So there's the military act of demonstrating their intent and capability, probing Western defences, and then the political act of Putin flexing his muscle. And it's all connected in at the moment with the Ukrainian
situation.
And
showing up to perhaps Europe's lack of strength from a military point of view.
Well, you know, the problem here isn't so much lack of strength, it's probably more lack of cohesion. Now, in a sense, what NATO have demonstrated in their recent statements is that the NATO powers' air forces have been responsive, and they have had a degree of cohesion in that response. But the other problem has to be addressed too, which you mentioned yourself. The Russians are being quite callous in what they're doing. Their aircraft have transponders because they fly in civil routes, but they're turning off those transponders. They're not notifying anybody of their exercises. So they're muscling into space that they shouldn't be in. And it may have consequences. This kind of saber rattling is all very well, but you know, it's muscling into the civil airline route, and the consequences of this should not be underlined, you know. It's a bigger issue than just what's at play.
Well, memories of MH17 are all very fresh in people's minds. You mentioned the areas where they're flying over. The Irish Aviation Authority have said that they're not aware of any reports indicating that the aircraft entered Irish airspace. Is Ireland irrelevant in all of this?
To some extent it is, because really the northern approaches were the ones that were being monitored, and it was a backdrop to the Scottish independence debate, actually, whether RAF Lukers would stay open a base up in Scotland and the other bases. Russian aircraft had routinely, over the last number of years, buzzed in and out of that area, but it would be further north of Scotland, and in those sea lanes as well. So to a large extent anyway, Ireland has always benefited from existing under the NATO umbrella without having to do much about it. We wouldn't be top of the list of any strategic targets from that point of view, but we wouldn't be off that list either. And that's a fact that goes back to the Cold War era.
That's reassuring. Declan, thanks very much indeed. Military analyst Declan Power. It's 10 to 9. Just a word from Éireann Road Air, and they say the line has reopened between Sallins and Newbridge this morning following earlier disruption because of a fatality on the line overnight. They say all their services have now resumed, but they are subject to delays. But they say that those delays should ease shortly.
Now, renowned musicians Tony McMahon and Steve Cooney launched a new CD in Dublin last night based on a concert they performed in Spittal over 9 years ago. McMahon has been to the forefront of traditional Irish music for several decades, but due to ill health, this will be one of his final recordings. As our arts and media correspondent Sinead Crowley now reports, last night's event was very much a celebration of his life's work.
But you're right.
This CD allows the listener to look inside my head at some of my high moods, at some of my low moods, at some of my tender moods.
Accordion player Tony McMahon speaks about his new CD, Squealamuck and Puckata, a collaboration with guitarist Steve Cooney, which, although recorded 9 years ago, was launched in Dublin last night.
And the strange thing about it is that never has a recording session gone so well for me, because I wasn't aware it was being recorded. Steve Cooney and I were doing a normal concert in front of a Connemara audience in Spittal, and we didn't notice the Ready na Gaeltacht, the recording engineer there. So we went home, and 2 weeks later I got a yell down the phone from Sean Potts telling, "You played bloody great."
A musician, critic, TV and radio producer, McMahon has been a central figure in Irish traditional music for decades.
My home in Ennis in the Turnpike Road was an open house in the 1950s for travelling musicians like the Dorans, for various visitors like Tommy Potts of Dublin, of the Coombe here, Joe Cooley. My family were mad about traditional music, and they would play until all hours of the morning, and that's where the music came from.
Steve Cooney played at last night's event.
One thing that always frustrated me about Irish musicians is the lack of acknowledgement of spirit. You hear somebody plays this beautiful tune which affects you emotionally, spiritually, and you say that, "Oh, that was so beautiful, really touched my spirit." "It is a grand tune." Irish musicians constantly fob off the fact that they are channels of spirit. After all, what is music but some intangible method of inducing emotion and spiritual reactions in people? So Tony was the first person you see then who would always talk about spirit, spirit, spirit.
The CD was launched by Bob Quinn.
He's an ecologist of music, and I don't think he likes very much too many experimentations, because he respects the music so much. So he can be quite passionate. In fact, I heard him on the radio not so long ago, and I was I was saying, don't, Tony, don't say it. But he did. He will. He speaks out.
Tony McMahon has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, so his playing days are coming to an end. But the mood last night was one of celebration. Des Geraghty was far and tea.
Tony's having difficulty playing. He has Parkinson's and he's had some other difficulties and so on with playing with the accordion. But he's overcome that because the spirit is so strong. And by putting this CD together, we can all, and our children and people, can enjoy that music and listen to it and appreciate what they brought to traditional music. And indeed, they have inspired so many other musicians, young musicians, and I believe have raised the standard of traditional music to a very high level.
I'm delighted with the end result, partly because I have had a visit from this old Mr. Parkinson, and it's a nice thing when one goes back a step to go forward a step. Even though I'm not able to play anymore, I have something to listen to. I feel as if it's a wonderful preview of my own funeral, if that makes sense. And I am delighted to see old faces. People have come from many parts of Ireland to meet me tonight. I am delighted.
Tony McMahon himself ending that report from Sinead Crowley. And let's talk coding. More specifically, let's talk to a 10-year-old coder who's developed her own website and is a finalist in the European Digital Girl of the Year Award. Lauren Boyle from Foxrock in Dublin is in Rome for the awards and is on the line. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning.
We've been tweeting since this morning and have been looking at your website, and it's principally for that website, Cool Kids Studio, that you've been nominated. Tell us about the website.
Well, Cool Kids Studio are a series of websites made for kids, and there's a lifestyle site, a maker site, and a healthy eating site. And there are useful tips and helpful links, like what to do on a rainy day, how to draw, or even what to have for lunch.
How does a 10-year-old girl who lives in Foxrock develop the knowledge to build these websites yourself?
Well, I went to Coder Dojo, and that's where I learned how to code.
Tell us about Coder Dojo for people who haven't heard of it.
Well, Coder Dojo is like, kids come from all around the world, because Coder Dojo is global, and they just come and they code, whether it's any programming language, and they just learn any sort of thing they want. And what's great about coding is that you can do whatever you want. You don't have to do a specific thing. You can do anything.
Now, you and your coding and your work with Coder Dojo, it's brought you into government departments, into some of the biggest companies in the tech sector in Dublin, and you'll be speaking at the Web Summit. Tell us about, as a 10-year-old, going into the likes of Google and LinkedIn and Twitter and giving presentations to people.
Well, I am part of Code for Ireland, so we've had a couple of meetings in places like LinkedIn and Google, and I was asked by Sinead McSweeney to go into Twitter.
And you address staff there?
Yeah.
Great. Well, listen, you're in Rome, and the awards are taking place later this afternoon. You're enjoying the trip, I take it?
Yeah.
Great, good stuff. Lauren Boyle, thanks for speaking to us this morning. That's Lauren Boyle from Foxrock in Dublin, 10 years old. She's developed her own series of websites. The websites are online. Google them, Cool Kids Studio. And she has been shortlisted as a finalist in the European Digital Girl of the Year Award.